Today on the agenda, agendas in the IRC channel, today on the agenda are four issues, reconsidering the prefix-suffix separator, issue 132, issue 133, adding container to language, or adding language to container, rather, issue 134, adding ID to container, and then issue 14, which is the JSON-LD grammar. Anything else that we should discuss during the telco today?
I put a couple of things out in response to the request.
Okay.
Let me see. I think the main thing was I wanted to discuss a little bit about Objectify and really how that might relate to framing, or whether if you have Objectify, you really need framing.
Okay.
And Marcus wanted to relook at 120 on expansion and at type.
Okay. And then I guess there was also, I spoke with Lynn Clark. Some of that conversation was on the JSON-LD IRC channel yesterday, but she has an interesting use case that's a bit difficult to accomplish in JSON-LD. So we might want to mention that very quickly.
The other thing is there was a little bit more discussion on language mapping. I guess that would be covered in 133.
Yeah. Yep. Here's one other thing. Oh, yeah. So let's first off, let's discuss some of the issues that have come up for the publication, FEWD publication in the RDF working group. Nicholas, you're up to scribe today. Are you in a position to scribe?
Yeah, I think so. I'll try.
Okay. Thanks.
Hopefully my mic will work today, but I think so.
Okay.
It sounds great so far.
Okay, just let us know if you need someone else to take over.
Sure.
And thanks, Dave, for scribing in the interim.
Sure.
Okay, so first topic is RDF working group. I guess the transition of documents to the RDF working group. So we're pretty much all set as far as the edits go. I don't think anyone's going to stand in the way of the FPWD publication in the RDF working group. The bad news, so that's the good news. The bad news is that the W3C publication tool is buggy, and we can't get the IPR without the tool working, and the W3C folks are working really hard to try and fix that issue before tomorrow. So it may be that the tool is fixed by late today, and then everyone is going to have to make IPR commitments as soon as possible, as quickly as they can, later on today and before the telco, the RDF working group telco, tomorrow. If we don't do that, then they're not going to be able to move to do an FPWD if we don't have good IPR coverage. The other thing to note is that we do have a Mercurial repository for JSON-LD right now, and I've spoken with the W3C staff, and they're okay with us just mirroring the GitHub repository for now. So basically, I'm going to set up a mirror script that basically mirrors the GitHub JSON-LD website to W3C so that they have, you know, a copy of they have a copy of the entire website, including the specs. It's the specs that are the important bit.
And tests.
That's correct. Yes. Correct. So that's there. That's where the Mercurial repository for JSON-LD is now. It's empty. I need to get around to doing migration. Okay, so we're blocked currently by the W3C tool. Everyone on the call should be on the lookout to make the IPR commitment later today or early tomorrow before the RDF working group call. And if for some reason W3C is not able to fix that bug, well, it's just going to push it off for another week or so, our ability to do an FPWD. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah, what does it mean in practice to do this IPR stuff?
Well, you when you sign up for the group, you made a loose commitment that basically says, I am okay with the W3C putting effectively their copyright on this, and I am saying that I don't have any patents that cover any of the work that I've submitted, or if I do have patents or know of patents, I would tell the W3C if you know such patents exist. So basically, it's a flagged, it's effectively a blanket statement to W3C saying that there are no issues going forward related to copyright concerns or patent concerns from you, one of the contributors to the spec. So the way the current copyright commitment works for the community groups and really all W3C specs is the people, the editors and the authors of the spec text continue to own that spec text. They have copyright over that spec text. So whenever we move it into another area, we have to all say that we're okay with the move from a patent standpoint and from a copyright standpoint. Does that make sense?
Sure, yeah. I just wonder, to be on the lookout today to do something, I think I said something on the mailing list some weeks ago regarding this.
Yes, but that is not enough. You have to go through a very special form that says, "Did you read all of this text?" And you acknowledge that you understand what you're doing. So there's a basically an agreement that you have to read and then agree to. Saying okay on the mailing list can be shot down in a court of law, because you can always say, "Well, I didn't understand what I was signing my I didn't understand what I was agreeing to."
Specifically, I wonder, because I'm sure when I will be online again, and I just want to make sure that I can make the statement in time to not block anything.
Sure,
where
yeah.
I will.
Yeah, unfortunately, we have to go through this very particular system. That's what the lawyers have cleared, and that's what we should do. Although anything else creates uncertainty about,
But it's the tool then which we'll use, which...
That's correct. Yep.
Right.
Yeah. Marcus, you're on the queue.
I was just wondering if there are any news regarding getting access to, the RDF mailing list and all that stuff.
Your audio is breaking up a bit, or it's difficult to hear you. Did you ask, is there any news on you joining the RDF working group?
Yeah, exactly. Because
you submitted your invited expert application.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, then they're being slow on it. I will ping them. In fact, actually, could you ping Yvonne? Do you have Yvonne's email address? Yvonne and David Wood.
Yeah. Not with me, because I'm just traveling at the moment. But yeah, we'll find it.
Okay, if you could ping Yvonne and David Wood in the RDF working group, then we can. They will hopefully approve you to join after that. They have to do, we have to go through this whole invited expert process, but I don't think it's been high priority because we haven't gotten the specs moved over just yet. So, yes.
Last it came up, they hadn't seen a request. I think, Marcus, you should probably plan on being on the call tomorrow, because I presume that you'll be certainly welcome if the process hasn't been completed
well,
at that point.
Well, that's not quite. They operate a bit differently. You have to have a special invitation by the chairs to join the call. You can ask for that, I could ask for that.
Why don't we do that? Because otherwise, there's not a meeting the next week. I believe we're going on to the summer schedule, which is every other week.
Yep.
So it'd be good to do that. There was also some discussion of having Nicholas come on. get that
yeah,
going
his,
anymore?
His invited expert form is a bit more complicated because he does, you, Nicholas, you're associated with a company that could be a W3C or is a W3C member, and you're trying to get clearance through them to join via them?
No, they're not. Well, actually, I work for a company which is a part of a global conglomeration, and they have no interest in joining, but that's blocking me from joining as an invited expert. It probably will, at least. It did for the RAFA working group for many months.
Yeah.
And currently I haven't gotten any response from SIX, which is the Swedish Institute for Computer Science, which are members, and I know people there. So,
okay.
But I haven't gotten any reply from them since I sent my mail some weeks ago. So I will put some pressure on them and see if they have some new information for me. Otherwise, I'll just have to try anyway,
right,
like the last time, and see how it fares out.
Yeah, unfortunately, this process takes longer than we'd all like. But, you know, it's W3C is under an obligation to try and get as many new members as possible. So that's why they try and exhaust all possibilities before adding an invited expert. Okay, any other questions on the status of the RDF Working Group publications? Okay. Next topic that's up, Marcus or Greg, do you guys have a preference on how to order the other stuff you guys want to discuss on the agenda today? There's Objectify versus Frame, and then discussing issue 120, expansion of type.
I'm fine.
Either one.
Okay, let's discuss... Marcus, your question on issue 120 was trying to understand why the decision was made on expanding type.
Basically, it's just one of those three or four resolutions you made 2 weeks ago.
Okay. So let's do that one first. Issue. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The question is basically just why do we support objects? Value at type at all if we then throw away all the data except ID. And the other thing was the reasoning to not support objects there is that at ID is a different IRI space than at type. But the resolution was then we just take the value of at ID and throw away all the other properties of an object if there is an object and basically compact it during expansion. It's a lossy compaction, so you lose data. I don't know.
Right. Okay. So the first question was why do we support expanded form for type when we end up throwing away all the data? I think this is one of those cases where we don't want people to use that type of markup. But if they do use that type of markup, we want to do the right thing, meaning that the only thing that type is looking for is an IRI for a type, you know, specifier. And so it's going to end up throwing everything else away that's associated with that. I think that's in fitting with what type is intended for. So effectively what the developer has done is they've given us invalid input, or what we would view as invalid input. And in order to make the algorithms to make them simpler, we effectively just take the ID and throw away everything else, because that's the only thing you should be using with ID in the first place. Is that a good reason for you, or do you think that we should be preserving the other data?
Well, I mean, I'm fine with both. Ways, but not really with mixing it. So either we keep the data or we don't just go for it at all. Because in my opinion, it just adds complexity, which is not really needed at all.
Hmm. how does it add complexity? Because doing it the other way, keeping the data certainly adds a lot of complexity, and throwing an error seems like it's unnecessarily limiting, or it's unnecessarily throwing an error, meaning that we could easily recover from the error, but we're choosing not to recover from the error. So the first approach seems...
You recover by throwing away data, and I mean, it's all about data, what we are doing.
Yeah, I think, I feel that statement is a bit too broad to make a decision, you know, on it. So yes, it's all about data, but, you know, we need a better reason for why we're throwing the error. And we couldn't come up with a very good reason for saying we should throw an error, right? So the only thing that's left, I think, is saying, well, we should keep the data. If your argument is, well, it's all about data, then we should keep the data. The counter argument to that is it makes the algorithm very, very complicated, and they're making the algorithm very complicated for a corner case, right? For something that we don't want to support anyway. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I mean, that applies to a lot of other cases as well. And this one is one corner case where we specify how to recover. We don't specify any other corner case.
We have plenty of corner cases that we recover from, right? We've had discussions where we say we're not going to throw an exception. We're not going to throw an error in this case. Instead, we're going to do X. So this isn't the only.
We have callbacks, but we never defined what the callbacks do.
Right, but my point is that we have this recovery mechanism. Are you saying that you would rather that the callbacks? I guess the callbacks called in this case, we don't automatically recover. We give them the option of recovering or not.
For example, yeah.
Okay. Does anyone else have any thoughts on this particular feature?
I would be fine with going through the callback mechanism for this as well, since it is considered invalid data. So maybe we should be going through the callback mechanism here. I mean,
Okay. We're
planning on doing that for lots of other invalid data places where we could hypothetically come up with ways to recover. But I think I would prefer the simpler approach. I mean, Marcus does make a good point that we would have to consider other things like, I mean, if there is no ID available, do we generate a blank node for a type? You know, what do we have to start defining all that sort of behavior, and I would rather just say using an object there is invalid, use the callback, and they can do whatever they want with it.
Right.
Yeah, it's just in the case that there is no callback, actually there always is a callback. I guess it's my implementations that typically don't do that. So I'd say perhaps the default behavior, if it's not responded to, is to do what we've currently specified, where we extract the ID, but then provide a means to allow the application to inject some more intelligence.
Is there a reason that we don't want the default behavior to just be set an error or error out?
Well, go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, the narrow use case that I saw for it really was where you had say you had RDF data that had been transferred over using RDF type instead of that type, in which case you'd have an expanded form ID. And now you say, okay, but I want to treat that when I'm doing compaction as if it's at type. And that was sort of the use case that I think drove this. It was basically converting from RDF data where it hadn't been converted over previously. So in that case, you'd get exactly what you want. You can certainly manufacture cases where you do some other thing in which you specify quite a lot of other information beyond just the ID. But I don't really see that as a pattern in RDF data.
So are you saying that the use case for this is where someone did a from RDF call but did not use that type, and then they still want to continue using that data at a later point and compact it? Because
yeah,
we do have that feature in from RDF to do the at type conversion for you now.
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Okay, so I think Nicholas also had something in there, but it is a narrow case. It seemed that there wasn't a really good reason to disallow it. And if we wanted to do it, then you'd need to be able to alias to at type. It's really any case where you've got expanded data, and you're aliasing some property to at type. It can't work unless it's a string. It can't work for something that's already an ID.
Right. So I think the stronger reason, at least for me, is that we don't want to error out on cases where it's fairly clear how we can recover. Right. I mean, this is the whole HTML5 way of approaching weird data. It's not necessarily wrong. It just needs to be massaged a little to put it into a decent state. So I think this is one of those cases.
Do we have a similar problem with add ID, since we also don't expand that, but there could be a property that you want to alias to ID at a later point?
ID is different because it's a subject. I think the closest thing we come to, I think, is the ID maps, where we want to take property and use it as an ID. But in terms of using some other arbitrary property, we do have the case where we've got, let's say, some other ID that's a numeric ID from an existing interface, and we want to apply a JSON-LD context into it. And if we do get towards some form of a pattern type system where that can be transformed, just don't know whether that would be expect to do that on initial conversion, or whether you might get it into JSON-LD and then later transformation.
Would this stuff be covered under sort of the templating transformation stuff that we've been looking at in the future? And would it be better handled there instead of as the specific behavior just for type?
That's a thought.
I'm concerned that... We still need to address this issue now, right? I mean, there could be a templating, an RI templating mechanism in the future, but I think that there's a lot of work that needs to go into that before it's fairly stable. And in the meantime, what's going to happen is that JSON-LD, the syntax, and the API is going to go to wreck, I believe, before the RI templating stuff is worked out. Unless we can make a lot of advances with the RRI templating stuff over the next 2 months, which I seriously doubt, considering all the other stuff we need to do.
But the thing is, currently there is no JSON-LD out there yet, and if we currently don't support it, but introduce it at a later point in time, we don't have any problem. But if we go the other way around, we'll never get rid of it anymore.
That's true, but I guess I'm not convinced that putting this in there is going to be terrible.
Do we actually have any data that looks like this? Like, Greg, do you have any use cases that look like this right now that you want this feature to be in there? I mean, is this just looking forward as it might happen, or do we actually have this and we want to handle it right now?
I think it was an observation made from trying to work with some external data sources and take something that had been brought in that was intended to be a type. And for whatever reason, it wasn't done during expansion. I could live without it, certainly, but it was sort of an observation that it would make sense to be able to accept something that was, I think if we're looking at a subject definition where there's a lot of stuff that might be thrown away, That's one thing. But if we're looking at a subject reference, where it really just an object with an ID, then that's pretty unambiguous that we should accept that, in my mind. It would be odd to not accept that. If we were to throw an exception, I think, or if we were to do something based upon callback, it would be for the other properties of an object if it was a subject definition.
Well, I could really go either way on this, so it's sort of up to what the consensus in the group is.
Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yes. It's hard to reason too much about this without looking at concrete cases, but I think that, well, parts of this discussion cropped up earlier or some months ago when we discussed whether it was possible to represent the RDF type as a generic relation, just like any other relation or property, which I've seen possible use cases for, since, say, for creating some JSON-LD to put into some kind of index, like Elasticsearch, you might want in your specific application to have both a symbol for the type, the ID, perhaps an IRI or a keyword value for it, and also some kind of label, perhaps in different languages, because people want to search on it, working with the label of the type of the thing you have in your index. And for that reason, we wanted to make sure that you could represent this if you were, i.e. that you could use a compact form, but if you declare type in your context, you won't use at type, but actually expand the type according to the definition in that context, where it might not be coerced as at type is. As it stands, if I'm correct, I believe that this works if you define your context like this and you create an expanded form from RDF without using at type. There is some flag for that, I think. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, good.
Up before we introduced that flag.
Yeah, precisely. And given that, and that in other cases, the compact form we use at type, I don't really think that I want to go from the first case and switch sort of mid-air to the case where I want to use at type again. So from my point of view, I think that I agree that I'm fine with throwing an error that we don't allow this form, that there should be means for recovering, i.e. throwing away stuff and coercing to just the normal string representation of a type from an expanded relation to a type. But I do think that that's enough from my point of view, that manual, well, not manual, but explicit recovery is enough in that case.
So just in
general, what were you saying?
I typed in a simple example of something you would get out of RDF semantics, where we would say that RDF type is an RDF property.
Yeah.
This is a case where if we mapped RDF type to at type, we would not be able to make this statement. And I'm wondering how would you do this in JSON-LD?
I wouldn't use at type to represent RDF type.
Yeah, in which case you're not using that feature. In the actual RDF axiom is RDF type is RDF type, RDF property. Expressed as turtle, of course, you can use A as an abbreviation for RDF type. In JSON-LD, if you use at type as an abbreviation for RDF type, you cannot make this statement. So certainly one way to do that is to not map into RDF type to at type, which allows you to do this. But now you can't take something and put it back the way you have.
I just typed the statement you put up in JSON-LD form. Isn't that the same?
Yes, but does RDF type map to at type?
In a context, or...
I mean, if RDF type maps to at type in a context, then I couldn't say at ID RDF type. It would be at ID at type, right? Because that would be the mapping for RDF type.
Yeah, but I think that in a context, if I wanted to use RDF type, or if I wanted to define a term for type, and I want to use... not use the at type syntactic form, I would map the term to RDF colon type, or, well, actually the expanded URI for that. And then I could decide whether or not I wanted to coerce that to ID or not. In that, using that context, even in compact form, I would never use at type. I could use a term which is coerced to an ID, or I could not. I think that that's the way it works today, that we have full control of that.
If I now start to say combine documents, if I was to take the RDF semantics and add them to some other document, then I wouldn't be able to. Well, it seems to me that it makes it pretty complicated now to use at type within a document that includes this statement. We've already wasted over half our time on this. But
could you write this example in the issue, and perhaps we can't, because it really... Well, actually, it is closed right now, isn't it? We should sort of...
No, I think it's still open.
Okay.
Is it closed?
Because we have to make sure that these cases are predictable, because I believe that... what I'm afraid of is that somehow, if we solve this and go along the route of not allowing any expanded form in at type, that I just don't want at type to completely overtake the possibility of using the general RDF type relation. That's my primary concern. Then I'm fine with having to choose the kind of compact form I want to use, if I want to use the at type form or the non-at type.
I think if we had a rule where you had, say, something that made more statements that said you can use the ID as at type, but you use the expanded form for all the other properties, that would mean we wouldn't lose data. In fact, you might keep ID in both places. I think that would address the loss of information case.
Okay. So Greg, we're running out of time on the call. So Greg, could you go ahead and type up this example, this specific use case that we're concerned about, in the issue, and then we'll have some discussion on that on the issue in the issue tracker, and then raise this again in a later meeting.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Also, someone just joined. Is that you, Josh Mandel?
Yeah, it is, and I don't know how to associate.
Okay, that's fine. I'll do it for you. Welcome to the call.
Thanks.
All right. So next topic up is Objectify versus Frame. So this is a question that Greg raised on how on the usefulness of Frame or how difficult it is to use Frame versus having something a bit simpler like Objectify. Greg, would you mind giving a quick introduction to your thoughts on this?
Yeah, my example came from some of the work I'm doing recently where I was actually taking an OWL representation and trying to get it to look like reasonable JSON-LD using framing. And my first observation is that even though I've implemented framing, I find it very confusing as to, you know, why stuff works one way versus the other. In fact, I'm still not sure why some stuff is not expanding or is not getting framed properly. And for instance, case being of having OWL classes as subtypes versus things that have actual IDs as subtypes, there's no way in framing to say one type of stuff is framed underneath using embedding versus and the other is done at a top level. And there's various other things where things don't work. It's really impossible to say because there's really there's no diagnostics that come out. It ends up being trial and error. But what I found is if I can do an objectify, meaning that I turn all of my subject references into actual JSON, JavaScript references or references in whatever the native representation is, then really what would be most useful to me is to some search or surface type of API where I would be able to use a pattern to identify subjects within a JSON, and now everything's linked, and I can just go ahead and access the data the way I want. I think that would be substantially simpler and really gets more to the heart of the way that people really want to use these objects versus framing, which is, frankly, a very complex algorithm.
Right. So I agree with you that framing is very complex, and even for me, it's difficult for me to understand how to construct something. The simple stuff is fairly easy in framing. The complex stuff can be fairly difficult to understand. So, Dave Longley, do you have any thoughts on this? I mean, we can't. The one issue here is, we can't remove framing until we have a good replacement for it. And I think in principle, what Greg just explained is it would be a good replacement or a good kind of a framing light way of going at the problem. And I definitely do agree with the references portion of it. If we could, if you could use references, and developers could just follow the references using, JavaScript dot notation or whatever their language's dot notation is, then that would be ideal. Dave Longley, do you have any thoughts on Objectify versus framing or Objectify as a replacement for framing?
Yeah, I do, but I see that Nicholas is on the queue, so I'm going to let him go first.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Nicholas.
All right. Thanks. Well, I generally agree with this. I primarily think that I have some use cases for framing, but I'll get to them after this phrase of Objectify, because Objectify really feels like the way to distinguish JSON-LD usage from regular JSON usage, given that JSON-LD has all the constructs in place to enable the Objectify mechanism. If you're using JSON-LD in a programmatic environment where you use JSON-LD specific APIs, it makes more sense to have an API which creates a graph structure of the objects within, since they are linked, because it feels like a bit of a waste of computing power not to do that when you can and instead just expand things in place. That's my general idea. And that's the way I've used RDF previously in object mappers. And ever since I worked on Glue and subsequently JSON-LD, I felt that this, the context definition is a perfect way to create much more usable mechanisms to navigate RDF in general and link data as the JSON-LD represents. One thing, though, just before I switch to where I found frame useful is perhaps I'm not sure about the name Objectify. It might not capture the essence. I used Graphify, or actually to graph feels a bit more clear, because what you do is you connect all the nodes together. That's, of course, just a detail, but if we're going forward with this, I just wanted to raise that.
There's also an alternate meaning of linked data that applies here. The fact that you're actually linking your data internally to create a real graph.
That's true. You can call it just link. but perhaps to graph is nice. The last time we discussed this, I posted a link to an experiment I did where it's actually in the RDFA lab repository, my sort of just grab bag of IDs, where I created an in-memory graph object using Graphify, as I called it, but it's the same as Objectify, basically. I added one thing which we could discuss later on, which is that I also added reverse relations that made navigating a vocabulary, an RDF vocabulary, just very, very easy. But the thing that I noticed was that the structure I got was interesting in that I haven't really seen so many internals of RDF implementations, but I get a general feeling that even the in-memory graphs in RDF are more triple-centric, and this is just linked objects in a graph, and that felt much more natural. The triple view of things could be created as an iterator, but this shape of the internal data felt so much more natural. So I certainly think that there is lots of value in this also for the general RDF working group and possibly for the continuation of the RDF API, the idea of projection and all that. So I couldn't be more happy to see us working a bit on this. Then to back up quickly and mention the case where framing is useful, that is the case where I mostly use JSON-LD hitherto, which is to index stuff in Elasticsearch. In that case, framing, although I didn't use the framing algorithm, that should be noted, I just used my own sort of expand everything up until it gets cyclic and just stop there. So I just expand as much as I can of a graph. And I always root this expansion in the current subject resource, which I can track because I create a view for a specific subject and then I put that document into Elasticsearch. The reason for wireframing and the duplication of data is useful there is because I have very advanced search needs where I need to search for documents based on things linking to and from that document on many levels. So that's a use case, but it's much more narrow than the use case of programmatic usage of data. And now I'm done.
Thank you.
Dave Longley, you're on the queue.
All right. I actually agree with a lot of what Nicholas just said. He makes a lot of good points. actually like Objectify a lot, other than the name, which I think we're in agreement on. You know, maybe we can use Connect or Link or, I don't know, something like that. But I would also prefer its use for new application programming. It feels very natural. If it had a query mechanism built into it, which is sort of what Greg touched on, we definitely need a way to say, I want to grab these particular subjects out of the graph and then connect those together and work with it. At the same time, there might have to be some measures that you have to take to avoid cycling indefinitely if you're iterating over your data, but maybe that's an uncommon case, I don't know. Some framing use cases certainly include things like digital signatures. We need to, in order to do digital signatures, we need that query mechanism to get the data that's to be signed, and we need all the data that's related to it. But we could potentially use, either if we just had a query mechanism that was separate from Objectifier framing, we could call that and then go from there. But the problem with, if we called Objectify and we had some kind of result from a query, at that point, what we need to do in order to sign it is we need to pass it through expansion and to RDF. And that's
or,
an issue.
Or flatten.
Yeah. Okay, well, the issue is we need to be able to actually detect cycles in those algorithms now, which is something that we hadn't had to do at this point because all this stuff would be interconnected. So maybe that's something we can deal with and handle the issue. I guess if it's going through flatten, that might not be so much of an issue because if a subject already exists in the subject maps that we build, that'll take care of it. So that might actually not be an issue, and it might work out just fine. In which case, I'll lean towards not using framing. But there is another use case that framing was originally designed for, which was to help support the zero edits idea of JSON-LD, which is that people have these existing applications that have data structured in a particular way, and framing, some of the features in framing that people haven't been using that much up to this point, at least in the group, is adding in defaults and things like that in certain areas where properties don't exist. So people might have existing applications where they're accessing and working with data that's structured in a very specific way. And the point, one of the purposes of framing was to be able to say, I can take new JSON-LD data coming in and make it look like and match the structure for my old application so I don't have to make changes there. Some of that has changed in that we've created this container feature that's in the context where we can specify whether or not things are arrays. They used to only be able to be done via framing. So some of that, the power has been removed there, but I'm not so sure that all of it has been such that we can support this case. And if everyone thinks that we can sort of support the case of handling older applications where we need to structure the data in a way that makes it work, I would be fine with just going forward with Objectify because I would certainly prefer to use it. I think it's a more natural, better solution than framing. That's it.
Okay. Marcus, you are on the queue next.
Yeah, basically I agree with everything that has been said so far, but is the question really if it's either framing or Objectify? I see they could complement each other quite well. If you're working in memory within your application, Objectify is great, but as soon as you have to write your data to a file or send it somewhere to a web API or something, framing is really useful and powerful. So I would say that while both are useful and we could design them in a way that they work together instead of replacing
Yeah.
I think it comes down to how much time do we really have to work on multiple different specifications.
Oh, I will throw in one more thing, which is doing this in dynamic programming languages that have garbage collection is very easy. Doing it in other languages, not so much. Mm-hmm. The Objectify call. But, maybe that's not a big concern for us.
Josh, you're on the queue next.
Yeah, so one thing I was going to say is when I put this together, I did it because it worked nicely in JavaScript. I'm not sure this would be a nicer, friendly way to do it in Java, even if you could. It might just be really ugly. That's one thought. Another thing about query is that I wanted to see if people had seen or had come across JSON select. It's something that could potentially be useful for querying either against an objectified graph or just a regular JSON-LD graph. I haven't tried it for that purpose, but it looks like it might be useful. And then the last point I was going to make was just about going from one of these objectified graphs to back to a serialized JSON-LD document, which I think is probably an important use case. And I don't think that should be too hard, to do.
Actually, that is the other thing I did with my implementation. I used the prototype-based features of JavaScript to make the linkaging, the linked objects being clones of the actual objects. This made the resulting graph object serializable just by calling to JSON on it. It expanded, it
sort of... Except for cycles.
Yeah. The references that I link in are clones of the original, the real object, the real node, with the difference that these clones have replaced their to JSON method with something that returns null, so it never gets connected when you it's skipped when you do the to JSON call on the structure, so it sort of expands into a tree again.
Well, there's sort of an issue with trying to get it back into a serializable form, which is whether or not you can tell that you're actually cycling. I mean, obviously you can tell that you're cycling if you hit the same subject, but it's legal JSON-LD to have more properties about a particular subject spread throughout the graph in different areas. So I don't know if it's going to be ambiguous or not to figure out if you've actually cycled.
I think flattening's a component of this, is to... objectify would first flatten, which basically serves the purpose of merging multiple objects that describe the same subject.
Well, I'm talking about after you've already objectified. How do you get back? How do you return?
Well, you can compare object equivalents.
Do you mean a deep comparison?
No. Rather than looking at the subject property, for example, you can just in JavaScript, for example, if the object is a hash, you can say, is hash 1 equal to hash 2? Are they actually the same object in memory? That could be your cycle condition.
Well, yeah, I guess if you flattened it to begin with, all of the objects are going to be the same, provided that you didn't make any changes while you were... as long as you're not cloning like Nicholas is doing, then whenever you make changes to any of the individual objects, you'll be making changes to the same ones. And it should work out actually. It should work out as long as you don't do what Nicholas was doing, then it should work out.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I in general though, I needed to, since I used the reverse features also in my experiment, which may or may not be applicable here. I hope they will be able to work in, but we'll discuss that further on. If you use that in order to get to add data, you have to invoke method anyway to ensure that everything is injected into the proper place.
Right. Okay. Did we get everyone that was on the queue that wanted to say something about this?
I have just a quick question. How do you enter the graph?
I think we're going to need some kind of query mechanism to say where you enter the graph.
Yeah, that's why I was
discussing some form of a surfacing or search mechanism. But the JSON select looks like a great way to go. And I think to the degree that we can complement other open technologies, that really does us a big service.
Yeah, especially if we don't have to write as much code, right?
Exactly. Yes.
All right, so we have, I think there are a bunch of really good ideas on the table. We need to spend the time actually implementing this stuff to kind of work out the details and make sure that it actually works. So the good news is that framing isn't in the critical path to getting the syntax and the API spec published. And more than likely, the way we're going to add features to the API is to create different specs. So we could potentially have a JSON-LD API framing spec, a JSON-LD API Objectify, for lack of a better term right now, spec, or a two-graph spec, and a variety of other things. So this doesn't sound like something that needs to be resolved in the next 6 months, but we should certainly start formalizing it a bit more and maybe getting some test implementations in there to understand whether or not we can completely replace the frame code, or whether or not two graph and frame and Objectify and whatever else we want to call these things, whether they complement each other and exactly how they complement each other. All right. Anything else on this particular topic? We're at the top of the hour, so we need to end the call.
I'll put an issue in there just so that we can track.
Great.
We can track it. I guess we do need to consider what the use, or how we're going to continue to use the GitHub tracker versus W3C tracker going forward.
Continue to use the GitHub tracker. There's not a requirement at W3C to use their tracker.
Well, the issue is getting the data back out to the mailing list, as Andy noted.
It's tracking the mailing list comments, right?
No, it's that when work happens on issues, the problem with GitHub is it just only notifies the people. It notifies the mailing list when the issue is open, but it only does further notifications to the actual people that are involved in the thing. So,
right, but W3C's issue tracker doesn't do that either. When you add new stuff, what I'm getting to is that we could write a script that does that.
If we could do that, that'd be great.
Yeah, so
we could also create a GitHub user for the mailing list, right? Just have him listen to all the issues.
You
have to manually add them to each issue, I think. Or actually, that's just a discipline.
There might be some setting. I don't know.
Didn't see it. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, in any case, what we could do is we could. Yeah. I mean, I know that the GitHub has a really good API, and this might be just an issue of getting the API to work and creating a database and understanding every single comment or issue we've sent out to the RDF working group mailing list, and basically, sending it out as the GitHub issue tracker. As a webhook, as Nicholas said. In any case, we'll look into it. It is a fairly high priority meeting that we need to figure it out in the next couple of weeks before we start publishing that stuff. But I don't think that there's anyone here that thinks that the W3C issue tracker is better than the GitHub issue tracker. Is that correct?
The only thing it does, which is nice, is from IRC or in email, you can reference issues, and they sort of get tracked in there.
Yeah.
And that presumably could also be done with other bots that would go the reverse direction.
Yeah. The issue being actually we're sitting down and writing the bot, but shouldn't be.
That would be
difficult.
The issue.
Yeah. Well, GitHub does have an API, so it's all doable. It's finding the time or the person that's going to sit down and actually do it. Okay. We're at the top of the hour. Anything else before we get off of the call? All right. Thanks for the great discussion. Have a great week, and we'll meet again next week.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.